Hi, and welcome back. I'm Simi Lerner, and this is the Judaism From Within podcast. The podcast where we develop the relevance and the importance and the profundity, if you will, of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch and his importance to the time in which we exist today. What we've been doing so far is going through the categories of Jewish law. We're up to the category of Jewish law that expresses love by no demand of you, except that you are in relationship with God and want to fill your mission. But before we go into that, it's worth pointing out to my listeners that first of all, I'm very grateful for your time, but also if you have a moment, you can check out RavHirsch.org. It's a website I've had for some time where I systematically structure the talks I've given on Rav Hirsch. If you want something on the weekly parasha in a 10-minute soundbite with a relevant angle to it, you'll find it there. So definitely check that out, and as always, if you give this a like or a rating, I always appreciate it. Let's talk about our commandment today. We're in the category of mitzvahs, and we're discussing rabbinic authority. Now that sounds counterintuitive. Why is authority under the category of love? Remember, Rav Hirsch has six categories. Some of them relate to justice, some of them relate to education, but a mitzvah, the category he calls a mitzvah, is an expression of love. It is asking you to pursue love, to be, in Rav Hirsch's language, an angel of love to the world. What does rabbinic authority have to do with that? But let's develop it. And I think there's a very relevant angle to this that not only allows you to appreciate the Torah in a deeper way, but also appreciate something relevant, how you relate to the rabbi of your community. Because when we talk about rabbinic authority, the most important principle here is knowledge. When it comes to fulfilling your mission as a Jew, knowledge is essential, which is why Talmud Torah is so central to a Jewish outlook. But also recognizing what is not under this category. When we are told in the Bible to follow the judges and not turn from left or to right, it's not talking about the rabbi of your community. It's talking about the Sanhedrin. At least from the Rav Hirsch's understanding, we are supposed to not deviate from the language and the law of the Sanhedrin. And what comes along with this is an appreciation of different categories, and that's what I'm going to open up with. It might sound a bit dry, but I think you'll gain tremendously from this breakdown that Rav Hirsch gives us. But then I'll ground it in a more symbolic pattern that he gives us that I think can be relevant today. I mean, relevant in the inspiring way that Rav Hirsch describes it, obviously, but I think I can take it a step further. Okay, let's open this up. Why is this an expression of love? Well, it's an expression of love because you're fulfilling your mission. You believe that the Torah is the most important thing in your life. It articulates your mission, and your mission is the most important thing in your life because it follows the highest ideal. It is in the pursuit of the highest good. It is revelation to Moshe, and that is your mandate to how to live the best life you can, to strive to the highest ideal. There is nothing more important but what to do. You need the Torah. But don't add or subtract from the Torah, because then it will be your mission. It turns narcissistic at that point. It's not a higher ideal you're striving towards, it's an ideal you're dragging down to your understanding. Okay, that's the first important point. Know what is in the Torah, and don't add or take away. But the next, well, how do I know what's in the Torah? Well, that is where rabbinic authority comes into play, and it plays itself out in a number of different ways. Biblical law, which we call d'oraisa, is both what is written in the Torah and understood by the rabbis, but also laws that were handed down, which we call laws received from Moshe, or laws derived from the certain hermeneutical principles within the Talmud. Now, these are categories and discussions and debated, but everybody agrees that there are certain biblical laws that aren't explicit within the Torah. That's the role of the rabbis, to let us know what those are. But then there are other laws, which we call derabbanans, which are either fences that fend you away from going over or transgressing a biblical law, which is basically taking that which is permitted and making it forbidden to stop you going too close to that which is truly forbidden. That is a rabbinic mandate, or a takana, which is something that is trying to help facilitate the accomplishment of a biblical law. So you have two distinct categories. You have the biblical and you have the rabbinic. But it's worth pointing out, a true rabbinic law is given to us by the Sanhedrin. It's given to us by the Sanhedrin and then passed down and can be overturned by a later Sanhedrin, similar to a court that is equal in size and in greatness, can overturn that which came previously. So you have certain biblical laws, and then you have rabbinic laws. The rabbinic laws can be overturned with time, given the introduction of another Sanhedrin, whenever that may be. So you have biblical laws, which are entrenched, and you have rabbinic laws. But both we are mandated to listen to by the Torah. Now, that doesn't make everything the same. It doesn't collapse into just one big, biblical law, because we treat them differently. If there is a rabbinic law, we are in doubt of the situation, we can go lenient. We can tend towards leniency. But if there is a biblical law which we are in doubt, we tend towards stringency. Without developing that in full, that really just shows us that there is a distinction between rabbinic and biblical law. And knowledge is important here. Knowledge is important because it is your mission, it is your calling, and understanding the categories and why they demand your obedience is because they are the highest court. Now, the Talmud is our best resource for this, but the Talmud isn't a Sanhedrin. So it's important to appreciate the category we're talking about, this highest rabbinic authority, is the Sanhedrin. That doesn't mean it wouldn't make sense to listen to your local Orthodox rabbi. It might do, but it wouldn't hold the same binding power as the Sanhedrin. So that, I think, is the scaffolding for our discussion, the knowledge of the categories, the knowledge of, okay, what do we mean by biblical and what do we mean by rabbinic? What do we mean by adding? It's all in the pursuit of fulfilling our mission as Jews in this world. But shifting to a more symbolic description, Rav Hirsch points out something really interesting, which I think is really relevant to today. Even though I said the biblical mandate to follow the judges refers to the Sanhedrin, Rav Hirsch points something out interesting. The Sanhedrin and the priests both had their location in the temple. That's important. You had the ark, the structure, which within it was the evidence to the testimony, the Ten Commandments, the Luchot, the Luchais that were placed within the ark. And around them, both the priests, who were there to symbolically demonstrate the ideals of Judaism, to be the teachers of the Jews, to demonstrate out through Karbonos in dramatic, symbolic action, the highest ideals of the Jew, based off their clothing, based off the Karbonos that were bought, which would draw the Jewish people closer to God. You also had the Sanhedrin, the ones who mandated law, were also present in the Beis HaMikdash. And this, Rav Hirsch points out, which I think is quite fascinating, they both required certain externalities to actually have their role. What do I mean by that? The authority of a priest only came about in the temple if he was wearing his big day kahuna, which didn't actually belong to him, was provided to him by the people. So it wasn't about him. His authority didn't stem from his soul, it stemmed from the garments he was wearing, the office he represented. Now, from Rav Hirsch's standpoint, that tells him something as much as it tells people something. It tells him something that he isn't the ideal he is representing with these garments, but it also tells other people something. It tells other people that, well, he isn't that, but he is representing that. I am supposed to strive like him towards this ideal that the big day kahuna, the priestly garments, are demonstrating. Going, as I said, on the website, you can see where I developed the clothing of the big day kahuna, both the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hediot, how they illustrate these different principles. But it wasn't the man. It was the office, illustrated by the externality of the garments. But in a very similar way, the Sanhedrin. There was a specific room they had to sit in, the Lishkois Hagozis, the room of hewn stone. And if they weren't sitting in that room, they didn't have their full authority. And this is really interesting. Both the symbolic theoretical given over by the priests, as well as the concrete practical given over by the Sanhedrin, both require an externality to gain its full authority and its full power. That is a really interesting point, that it wasn't them themselves, it was the office that they were part of, and that demanded a certain externality. Now, how do I bring this into daily life? How is this relevant to my relationship with my rabbi? And I was thinking about this, like, what externalities in today's day and age would I say are essential to respecting a rabbinic figure? And I've got to be careful here, because this has to apply to everybody. And I think an externality that applies to every rabbinic figure in any synagogue, in any shul, in any yeshiva seminary, is a very simple question. Who do you answer to? And I explain what I mean by that. Like when it came to the Sanhedrin and it came to the Kohanim, they had to know it wasn't them. They weren't the emergent spirituality, where the idea was coming from, or the authority was coming from. It was from the office that was given to them, that they were servants too, and within that context, they had authority. In a similar way, each one of us can go to our rabbinic figure in our lives and say, who do you answer to? What externality do you answer to? What externality, in a sort of symbolic way, are you sitting within? Who, if they knock on your door and say, that idea you said isn't right, you have to rethink it, who will you sit yourself down to? Who will you lower yourself in relationship with? Who do you respect? Who, if they give you a ring, you're like, I hear you, I can take a step back. I think that externality is what in today's day and age gives rabbinic authority. It's the humility. If you have a Rav or you have a Rebbetzin and their response to, who do I answer to, is, nobody. I've worked it out. Run a mile. Maybe that's putting it too strongly, but I really believe that. If you ask anybody, Rav or Rebbetzin, who do you answer to? They have no external structure that they are sitting within. That's very dangerous, because then they think it's coming from them. And that's not true. It comes from their relationship with the Torah and the relationship with the tradition. And if they've, even in court, they're cutting themselves off from the tradition, even though not explicitly, they're cutting themselves off from the structure that, in my opinion, gives them their authority. That humility of recognizing it's not them. I think that's a nice parallel to the Sanhedrin and the priests. What structure are you sitting within? What ideas are you willing to say, I was told this isn't a good idea? My creative processing and my good idea was told that, no, you have to take a step back. Or this thing you're doing isn't right. You have to rethink this. Who can say that to you and you'll be in agreement to their authority? And I think if you don't have someone like that, that's very dangerous. And I think that goes against this idea of authority in the Torah itself. So, with that said, as always, I want to pass on my thanks, my appreciation, and today we discussed rabbinic authority in the pursuit of the mission of the Jew. Have a wonderful week.